When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Barr back to pass, takes a deep drop, steps up, looking to his right, and the pass intercepted by the Giants at the 40-yard line. Intercepted by the Giants. Corey Webster got the pick, and he's tackled at the Packer 34.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 304, McMonagle here with you on The Fan, 888-808-1019. Let's talk a little Giants, as we just heard Bob Papa on that promo. Obviously, the Hard Knocks show was Tuesday. Again, I was off all of last week, so I wanted to talk about something that, you know, bothered me a little bit this week. We'll get to the Jets, too, and obviously, is Adams going to come and rejoin Aaron Rodgers? We'll see. But let's talk about the Giants for a second and the owner, because I think Hard Knocks has been far better than I ever expected. Honestly, I've enjoyed it immensely. And I've said this before, I'm not sure if it's the same if it's not your team. I don't know how other fans view it, but I found it, one, the novelty of it being its first of its kind, and really seeing how the innards of the organization work and how they put together these things and how deals come together and dealing with free agency and all these meetings and stuff. The novelty of it is interesting on its own. But having it be your team, to see the inner workings of and get an idea of how your GM, the people making decisions for your franchise operate, I find extremely fascinating, even more so than camp, which is going to be with the Bears this year. I think this is far more interesting, a Hard Knocks, than others of previous elk. Now, again, if next year they do it and it's, you know, the Tampa Bay Bucks, maybe I won't be as interested. But right now, I think this is great. I think we've learned a lot. I don't want to go over the whole episode because it was Tuesday. We're already ready for the next one. We've already gone over all the stuff about Saquon Barkley. They never offered him the contract, you know, blah, blah. We get it. We all know. But a couple things I do want to focus on, and mainly John Mara. Because I feel like John Mara has got a little bit of a bad rap in all of this. Now, I do agree, some of his thinking I disagree with. There's no doubt. His desire to keep Saquon Barkley for the, you know, and even in previous episodes, I think it was the first episode, talking about maybe drafting a running back high in the draft. Yeah, I disagree with all that. I disagree with some of his thinking. But here's what I'll say, because it feels like what came out of that is that the Giants have some sort of meddling owner who has a complete warped sense of how to build a team. And it's a real problem for the New York Giants. And here's what I'll say. While, yeah, I disagree with some of the stuff he said, and if he's forcing things to have happen, yeah, it's a problem. But that's not what's happening. And the big line that comes out of this is when they're talking about Saquon Barkley, he says to Joe Shane, now remember, he is our most popular player by far. And everybody seemed, I mean, I saw a million stories. Oh, John Mara's looking to sign players and sign running backs because they're popular. John Mara's basing his team on jersey sales. John Mara, I'm sorry. Did I miss something? First off, the meddling idea. We know he wanted Saquon Barkley. Is Saquon Barkley here? He literally told the general manager, I'm going to have a tough time sleeping if Saquon Barkley is a Philadelphia Eagle. What is Saquon Barkley today? The owner is allowed to have an opinion. The owner is not allowed to allow his opinion to override what the people he brought in here to run the team to do. Their decision-making needs to be more important than his opinion. But he's allowed to have one, and he let Saquon Barkley leave. He let Saquon Barkley go to the team he told you he'd have a tough time sleeping if it happened. And if you saw the exchanges in this thing, is Joe Shane nervous in the slightest about what John Mara comes in saying? He's laughing. If you watch it again, John Mara comes in, he's like, Saquon, you know, and he's talking about it. And Joe Shane literally goes, look, you know, right now it says, you know, it sounds like the Eagles are out. I don't know. Like, whatever it was. Like, I think it was the Eagles are out and this one's in or whatever he said. And you could see the tense unhappiness on John Mara's face. And what's Joe Shane's reaction? He chuckles. He wasn't wringing his hands. He wasn't nervous to death about what John Mara's going to do. It was very clear to me that despite whatever John Mara might say, Joe Shane was going to do what Joe Shane felt was best. But the idea the owner can't have an opinion, or that for some reason, is this not a business? Am I missing something? Is John Mara not running a business with an audience and a clientele? Because as far as I'm concerned, the most popular player is without question a valid comment and part of the conversation. It's not the overwhelming decision. It's not something you base decisions on. But when you're discussing a player, for the owner to say, hey, just so you know, he is our most popular player by far, be aware of the fan base reaction and the idea they love this guy. And yes, he makes us, I mean, listen, he makes the NFL money in jersey sales. They all, like, it's not like, as far as my understanding of it, I guess I could be wrong. My understanding is all this NFL stuff goes to the pot and they split it. But maybe I'm wrong on that. I certainly think that's how MLB works. But whatever the case may be, I mean, the idea that the owner can't say, hey, the fans love him and he's a popular player and all of this, like, that's not part of the conversation. It's clearly not the determining factor. He didn't sign him. But the idea that, oh, John Mara wanted him signed because he sells jerseys. What? That's not allowed to be said in that room? He shouldn't take the fan base into consideration in any level? It shouldn't just be one of the many bullet points when making a decision? It's absurd. It's absurd. The idea that can't be uttered, or that somehow means that that's how he builds his team based on who he thinks is the most popular, is ridiculous. He's allowed to say it. It's something that's so, it's so ridiculous it can't be spoken. I think John Mara has a misconception about the running back position and Saquon Barkley's importance to the team. No doubt. I do. And let's be fair, since the passing of his father and him becoming the leader of the team, he has made a bunch of terrible hires. Up until this point where I kind of have faith in Joe Shane and Brian Daboll, but I mean, the hires he's made since firing Coughlin and the GMs he's brought in and the coaches he's brought in have been disasters. And he's been forced to pivot from those choices every other year. This is going to be the first regime, the first head coach to make 3 years since Tom Coughlin left. And I don't know if John Mara has read this situation correctly. I'm more in line with exactly what Joe Shane did. But the owner didn't meddle. The owner didn't force Saquon Barkley to be a Giant. Other owners would. Other owners have. He allowed Joe Shane to do what Joe Shane thought best, but he's allowed input. And the input he gave was not ridiculous. And it's more than fair to bring up the popularity of a player when you are putting on a show once a week. When you are entertaining an audience once a week. When you haven't given them a winning product in damn near a decade to contemplate whether or not it's a smart move to get rid of a brilliant talent who is beloved by the fan base and is the only guy they really want to watch. The idea that that's not a discussion, or that John Mara is somehow out of line for saying it, is absolutely ridiculous. It's ridiculous. It's not why you signed someone, no, and they didn't. But it's worthy of a conversation. I thought the reaction to John Mara making that comment was absurd. 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 He's our most popular player by far, just so you know. He's our most player. Like, wow. Oh, my God. He wants to sign players because of jersey sales. I read like 10 stories like that. Were you nuts? It's not what he said, nor is that what they did. Like, meddling means meddling. Meddling means influencing decisions. Meddling means taking matters into his own hand and forcing things. Like the Melo trade. That's meddling. Giving suggestions and pointing out facts about your clients, about the people you are selling a product to, is not ridiculous. Nor is it meddling. Now, I do admit, John Mara has been the one guy who comes out of this a little... don't love his football takes, but he's allowed to have them. He's allowed to have them. And by no means is suggesting that just be mindful that he's our most successful, that he's our most popular player, is out of left field or some sort of unreasonable take. It drove me absolutely nuts. Out of line, what I say, out of field. The idea that that is some sort of, you know, irresponsible take, that, you know, and here's the other thing. Like, again, Joe Shane, watch it again. John Mara walks in the room. Joe Shane tells him plainly what he's thinking. Joe Shane tells him plainly the truth. And Joe Shane chuckles when he can tell the owner's not thrilled. He's like, well, listen, what are you going to do? Watch it again and tell me if you feel Joe Shane feels threatened or influenced in any way when John Mara walks in the room. If he feels like listen, is there a little bit of a gulp when he says, I'm going to have a tough time sleeping if he goes to the Eagles? Yeah, because he knows that's a possibility. It's not a, oh man, I better make sure that doesn't happen kind of gulp. It's a, oh man, he's not going to be happy when that happens gulp. But man, oh man, I could not believe the reaction to that. I'm looking forward to Tuesday night, getting more into the draft. I actually think it's been a much better show and a more fast, and helped me get, you know, a little bit, scratch that football itch that we all have this time of year. It's been a really great show. And I think Joe Shane comes out, a lot of people, you know, were down on the way he handled the Saquon Barkley situation. I think he handled it great. An awkward phone call here or there, but I feel like Joe Shane and Brian Daboll have come off looking good. And again, we're going to see in the draft, for you Daniel Jones lovers, not to harp on the Daniel Jones conversation over and over again every time we get into a Giant conversation, but just from the promo of what's going to happen on Tuesday, when they're talking about trading up, watch the promo and watch Brian Daboll's face when asked if he would trade up for Daniels. Good. Watch it. We all know what happened, and I'm shocked they're showing it. But this team knows what we all know. You can't trust Daniel Jones. Doesn't mean he's going to be bad. Doesn't mean the Giants are doomed for disaster at that position. I don't think he'll be successful. I mean, the conversation, like, I walk into the newsroom talking Giants for about a half a second, talking a bunch of different stuff. Lopresti, who will be in later in the warm-up show, filling in for Jerry, who's filling in for Boomer. He said to me, who starts the most games for the Giants this year, quarterback? That's the conversation. The conversation right now isn't, will Daniel Jones lead them to the playoffs? How many games will the Giants win? How many touchdown passes will Daniel Jones throw? Maybe the conversation will be how many yards Malik Nabers has. How many receptions Nabers has. The conversation around Daniel Jones is, how many games will he start? How long will he be healthy? And if they lose, how quickly will they pull him out of fear of injury and ending the season on the injured list, which would guarantee next year's money? That's the conversation around Daniel Jones. And I get the feeling you're going to see on Tuesday in the episode where they talk about trading up exactly why. Exactly why they were interested in some of these young kids. Because it's very difficult to trust this quarterback right now. And we'll see. I'm open to it. They did, and they showed how they got the offensive lineman they wanted, Lumineer and Runyon, were the two guys they targeted and were able to get. Hopefully that impacts this room with the new offensive line coach. Hopefully this offensive line is far better, because while I think it's overblown, and while I disagree even with Joe Shane, because as Joe Shane said in the first episode, that even Patrick Mahomes couldn't win with this offensive line. Maybe not the Super Bowl, but he'd win a hell of a lot more than Daniel Jones and the other quarterbacks have. I disagree that, you know, the offensive line has been so putrid, you can't expect much more than what the Giants have given you. I disagree. And you can't expect much more than what Daniel Jones has given you. I disagree. But having said that, you can't expect greatness. You can't expect, you know, real great quarterback play. I get that. And Daniel Jones, other than Patrick Mahomes, I think Patrick Mahomes would still give you great quarterback play. I do. But Daniel Jones needs a better offensive line. Daniel Jones hopefully is going to get more weapons. He's going to be short Saquon Barkley, but he's going to have a better wide receiver room, and he's going to have a better offensive line. But it is the season of Daniel Jones, and we'll see what he does. And for the Jets, it could be the season of Devontae Adams.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan. Sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Woo! Uh-huh. 325, McMonagle with you on The Fan. 888-808-1019. Talking a little bit of football as we just got into the Giants and Hard Knocks and John Maron, the quarterback, and we'll see more on Tuesday. The Jets, the all-in Jets. Obviously some news last week while I was off. Devontae Adams, is he coming, is he not? Starts with a comment from Aaron Rodgers, leads to a morning show. Boomer Esiason talking about it. Could he come to the Jets? Could he be reunited with Aaron Rodgers? And then he himself on, I guess, a podcast with Shannon Sharp mentioned that, hey, if he was going to go anywhere and be reunited with anyone, Aaron Rodgers would be the place. So there's been a lot of buzz. Everyone's speculating it could get done. I saw a bunch of interviews. Oh, I expect it by week one. I don't know if it's definitely going to happen or not. I think it makes sense, I suppose. And for the Jets, here's my take on it. And this is going to be one of those, you know, I'm supposed to have this clear-cut answer. He's obviously a great player, obviously. And the success him and Aaron Rodgers had are, you know, irrefutable. And if you can get him, if you're Joe Douglas, it's a no-brainer. I mean, it's one of those things where they're all in, right? They're all in for these next years. You want a number one pick? You want two number one picks? What the hell do I care? I need to make this team win. Otherwise, I'm going to be fired anyway. It'll be someone else's problem. They don't have first-round picks. Like, it's literally on that level. Like, that's how I would treat it. I know that's, you know, Joe Shane has been quoted in the Hard Knocks talking about, hey, I got to do what's best for the franchise. I can't do what's best for me. I can't start thinking that way. If I'm Joe Douglas and I know, if I don't win with Aaron Rodgers in the next year or two, I'm going to be out of a job. I might as well go all freaking in and get everything I can in the short term while I still have young defensive talent, while I still have a team with, you know, a young offensive weapons, and I can get another one here and someone comfortable with Aaron Rodgers who can talk the way it could be Randall Cobb, but only not washed, and still pretty friggin' damn good. So, I mean, look, it's an easy thing to do if you're the Jets. I don't care what the price tag is. You almost have to do it if it's available to you. But here's my only question. Because I understand Mike Williams was signed. I think it's a good signing. I think he's a good wide receiver. I think he does a lot of things to help this team and will help Garrett Wilson. I don't know if he can stay healthy. So on that level, yeah, we've seen Garrett Wilson be tremendous. and he's been a great wide receiver. He's super talented. We've seen him do things with Zach Wilson at quarterback and get 1,000 yards and have good years. Imagine what he could do with Aaron Rodgers. I get that. And I get that all the defensive, you know, if they don't have other weapons, if Mike Williams isn't healthy, they're going to all converge on Garrett Wilson. It's going to make him tough for him. And so to get him that second wide receiver is uber important. I get all that. But here's my only concern. When I look at this team right now as presently constituted, I believe in Wilson. And I kind of want him to be the guy. I kind of want him to make that next step. I want him to be, I think he's that talented. I want him to be the guy. I want Aaron Rodgers and him to be the connection. And I just don't know if it's possible. And I know it's different. I'm not saying Adams is like a disgruntled type guy. I know he went to the Raiders to go play with his buddy from college and Carr was gone the next year. And ultimately they've done a lot of losing there. And I'm sure now he feels better about Antonio Pierce as the head coach. As to what it was prior, which was a disaster. I get all that. And I'm sure they could find a way to make it work and Aaron Rodgers will do it. But I don't want Aaron Rodgers to feel like he has to get Adams involved in the game at the expense of Garrett Wilson. And I understand I'm really looking for a problem and something that you have to say yes to if it falls into their lap, if the situation arises, if they have what the Raiders are looking for, if they can make it work, whatever the case may be. I understand you can't say no, but I'm wondering, does it help or hurt Wilson? I could make the case for either very strongly. I still want Wilson to be the guy, and I don't know if that's possible if they bring the gang back together. It would be difficult for me not to see clearly now. He's the one. Wilson's the two. And I see Aaron Rodgers trying to make sure Devonta Adams gets involved in the game, which isn't a bad thing. He's a great wide receiver. I don't know if he's still as good as he was a couple years ago. I don't see why not. But it's a move you have to make. It's a no-brainer. It makes them better. I'm just slightly worried in a team that I already think is good. But they're an all-in team. They're an all-in team. And I think they are. I think they're the best team in the division. I think the Jets are winning the AFC East. I really do. I think they're winning the AFC East. I think they're playing in an AFC Championship game with or without Devonta Adams. As long as Aaron Rodgers is healthy, that's the kind of roster I think they have. That's the kind of team I think they have. And even with a coach that I don't have faith in, you know, he's never been afforded the opportunity to have a legitimate functioning offense. And despite the fact that Hackett had a terrible go of it in Denver and then had a terrible go of it with the Jets last year. Him and Rodgers are a proven commodity. That's just what they are. Now, you want to tell me he didn't call plays, blah, 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 blah. Aaron Rodgers knows better than you the importance of Hackett in the offense. And Aaron Rodgers, at every single turn, bends over backwards to talk the guy up. Every single turn. So I want to see the two of them together, molding this offense, getting it going, and ultimately having Wilson be the key threat in the passing game with a Mike Williams running down the field, creating space for Wilson, which he hasn't had in his entire career. And while I go get Devonta Adams, I'm still concerned that that's just a lot of wide receiver and only one ball. And at some point, the all-in can become a detriment. At some point, the all-in, you know, the super teams tend to fail. I like what they have now. I like the mix now. Having said that, you got to go do it, but I'm a little concerned. But we'll see if it even is plausible. I do think it's, I mean, people are talking like it's a fait accompli. We'll see. And I'm sure he wants out of the Raiders to come to the Jets because I think the Jets are damn good. I think the Jets are damn good. And we'll see if Aaron Rodgers can do it. But that would be some addition right there. That would be some piece that they have added to that team if they could pull this off. But at the same time, when I think of the team, I want Garrett Wilson to be the stud number one wide receiver. That's my vision. Get him otherwise. Mike Williams is perfect for me as long as he stays healthy, which is the issue right there. You can't guarantee that Mike Wilson that he's a player who's healthy. And you need the number two. Totally agree. You need the number two. But is that what you're getting with Adams? 888-808-1019. 888-808-1019. So that's where we are. We got the football story. Obviously, the baseball was front and center last night. The baseball has been front and center for a while, and the trade deadline is right out in front of us. And I think both teams are in the buyer's department. They'll be looking to spend money. Well, you know, prospects. Or, you know what I mean. I said, you know what I meant. You know what I meant. And I think they both are, but the question is, to what level will the Mets do it? And will the Yankees be willing to make a trade? And this is the question for me with the New York Yankees. Is Brian Cashman going to be willing to make a trade he's uncomfortable with? Because that's what it's going to take. There's no doubt about it. It's going to take him being uncomfortable. Spencer Jones is the crown jewel of the organization at the moment. I mean, if you want to include Jason Dominguez as still being a prospect, then he would be the crown jewel, I suppose. But I think that's the only one they won't sell. Spencer Jones is the big prospect. So how do you treat this? Are they willing to trade Spencer Jones for a package that could bring them back an infielder and a relief pitcher? Or two pieces that they could use? Or are they going to go more along the lines of me and Fliegelman were throwing out some names, like they've talked a lot about trading with the Rays. Could you get a Rosario? Could you get a Rosario, a smaller piece who's better than what they have, who hits left-handed pitching much better, has been really pretty impressive since becoming a Ray? Is that a kind of piece? Are those the kind of moves? Are they just going to get slight upgrades and professional players at positions that right now they're just dreadful at, like third base? Or do they try and make a big move? Do they try and go to Oakland and get, you know, Miller and Rooker? Like, is that something they could do? And use Spencer Jones to do it. The only thing I'll say about Spencer Jones, I'm willing to move him. You have to be. This is the year. Typically, I've been hesitant to do it. I've understood why the Yankees have been hesitant to do it. But the fact of the matter is you need to win this year. And the system just, honestly, like right now, Volpe, Wells, and I guess if you want to give Rice right now, like this is the first test of the organization since the change in 2019. 2019, they changed the way they do things. They changed who was running the way the minor league system is run and the development team. They changed all that in 2019. And the first real guys who are coming up, because everyone likes, oh, the Yankees haven't developed anyone forever. The Yankees haven't developed anyone forever. Totally true. Totally true. Can't argue. I mean, it's Cano and Judge. Now, those are both Hall of Fame talents, and Judge is the best player in baseball. So it's at a very high level, those two. But still, two is not enough over the last 20 years. Totally agree. That's why they changed things in 2019, and they've been better at it. The minor league teams are scoring more runs. The minor league teams are winning more, and they've gotten better hitters. But the first real test cases here are Volpe, Wells, Rice, and Jason Dominguez. And right now, Dominguez is the only one who has shown you real high upside. Volpe, I'm sorry, there's no other way to put it. He's been a disappointment. He's won a gold glove, yes. He's been a solid player for maybe most of the year, but he's been brutally bad at times too. Brutally bad. And he wasn't very good offensively last year. So right now, he doesn't look like it's going to be a major, you know, win for the Yankees. Rice has come through with a couple of home runs. I like his swing right now. He's the third or fourth best hitter on the team, which is more about the team than him. But we'll see where he is. Wells is starting to turn around having good at-bats, but ultimately, it's not like this farm system has shown a ton. Even since they've changed, we're just getting to see the results of it. And so far, nothing that jumps off the page other than Dominguez. You have to be willing to move Spencer Jones. But the one thing I'll say is it has to be at, you can make a dual move here, but I have to get a professional hitter. I have to get someone who dramatically helps my lineup. I can't trade him away for a starting pitcher. I know how bad the starting pitching has been. I understand Rodon. I understand Nestor Cortez. You got Clark Schmidt coming back. And I'm fine with trading away lesser prospects for a middle of the rotation guy, because right now they do have an ace, and I still believe in Luis Gil. So I feel like I got two top of the rotation guys, and I can fill in with, you know, then you get Stroman, who I, you know, have faith to not be horrible. I know that's not much of a ringing endorsement, but I have faith to give a representative performance. And then you got to get one other guy. And that's either Clark Schmidt, or you could trade for a Tyone or someone of that ilk, who, you know, another pitcher's having a decent year you can get for a prospect. I don't need to trade my best blue chip prospect for a starting pitcher. That's not where their need is, despite it being an awful part. And I don't know if I, you know, even for a closer, it'd have to be a closer with control. Miller, okay, I'm willing to do it, but I'm not willing to do it for Tanner Scott on a one-year rental. I need the hitter. I need to impact this lineup if I'm going to trade Spencer Jones. Preferably, I'd like to do both. Me and Fleegs are talking about it. He proposed the idea of Chisholm and Tanner Scott for a package that begins with, if not only for, Spencer Jones. Now I'm getting two players, getting two impact players. I'm getting a back end of the bullpen guy, and I'm getting someone who theoretically I could put in the middle of my lineup. Hit a 3-run home run yesterday against the Mets. That's what I'm looking to do. Paredes and a reliever. That's what I'm looking to do. McMahon has been assured by Colorado that he's not being moved. You can cross his name off the list, apparently. So, I mean, the options become limited. And you are not going to get great value for a player who's 6'7", the left-handed hitting Aaron Judge, runs like a deer, can play center field, all that stuff. You are not going to get what you hope you get for him. And Brian Cashman has been reluctant to make deals he's uncomfortable with. And if he holds to that, if he continues to not make deals he's comfortable with, or uncomfortable with, rather, if he sticks to just only being comfortable and not going outside his comfort level, the Yankees are going to come up empty. And that can't happen.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Manning calling signal, takes the snap, looks left, talks about it.
First is wide open, touchdown Giants! In the left corner of the end zone!
Touchdown!
With 35 seconds to go, the Giants regain the lead!
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
I know it's not the like the same music or even close to it, but I don't know why. Every time I hear this rejoin, I think of like a villain in Mario Brothers. Like the level where you get to, you know, you got to hop over him and stomp on him three times. I just think of King Koopa, I guess, or I guess now Bowser he's called, which also threw me for a loop. That one, whew, just when that movie came out and my kids had to go see it, you know, and to find, I always like, I remember watching it and it's like Bowser this, Bowser that, Bowser this, Bowser that, Bowser's the bad guy. And I'm like, okay, I'm like, where's King Koopa? I'm like, King Koopa is the bad guy. I mean, Bowser's like an underling, but where's King Koopa? And then I was to only find out that they are one in the same. That Bowser is king of the Koopas? I had no idea. Totally threw me for a loop. I was blown away. Absolutely blown away. It stayed with me for days that I was unaware of this. But that music makes me think of like impending doom, which reminds me of Carlos Rodon, who's pitching later today. Because now this is a big start for Carlos Rodon. And he does not do well with big starts. This is, I believe, the season finale already with Tampa Bay. You do not want to start the second half losing 3 of 4 in the first home series against the team that was under 500 or right at 500 when this series started. You cannot. He cannot go in there and get beat up. This is a big start leading into the Mets series, which I guess will be Luis Gil and Cole for the Yankees. And who's pitching for the Mets in the Subway Series? Manaea and Fleegs. You know who's pitching the other game for the Mets? And the Yankees?
Well, if Quintana recovers, he had the fever the other day.
Right. It'll be Quintana and Manaea?
Yeah. Manaea, definitely.
Yeah. And it will be Luis Gil, and I believe it says, and it would be Cole's day. I don't know why it wouldn't be Cole. So it'll be Cole and Gil, the two best pitchers for the Yankees. But this is a big game going into that series. You cannot, if you're Carlos Rodon, this has got to be, you got to figure out a way to put your foot in the sand and stop this nonsense. This is a big start because the Yankees can't fall behind. These first innings have dictated almost every game. When they lose, the pitcher either gets blown up or the offense comes up small in big moments in these first couple innings of every game. It's almost, you know exactly what's going to happen. If they give up two or three runs in the first inning, game's over. If the Yankees leave the bases loaded in the first inning, game's over. Like, that's how it's gone. They have followed the script of the early parts of this game. The Yankees have got to jump out to a lead, and Carlos Rodon has to put up zeros against a lousy hitting Rays team. Unbelievable. Just disgusting what we've seen. Just unbelievably disgusting. Sunday was, I know I keep harping on it. That was the worst. I haven't had a chance to talk about it. I would talk to everybody about last Sunday in Baltimore. That was a gut punch of all gut punch. That was the worst game of the year. It was the worst loss of the year. It was I couldn't for days. It ruined my vacation. Now, I'm not kidding. That Sunday game ruined my vacation. One, it got me and my wife into a fight. I probably shouldn't do this. She's going to get mad at me. But I couldn't let it go. So we were at the house watching the game. I was at the house with my kids watching the game. My son was into it a little bit. We were watching the game. Oh, they're going to win. I'm like, yeah, look, what a home run. I was like pumped after the Rice home run. Watching Holmes. And I said to my son Tommy, as soon as the inning started, I said, if Clay Holmes blows this one, it's going to be a real problem for me. Because I've tried to defend him. You can't blow. It's one of those games you can't blow. They get that big home run. You're about to sweep and take over first place heading into the All-Star break. You can't blow that game. So, obviously, what happens. And, you know, Volpe blows the ball and Verdugo falls down. And so, for me, it's not about Clay Holmes. It's about choking and being unable to rise for the moment. Like, literally, to your feet. Can't rise to your feet. Verdugo falls down. But it actually caused a problem because then we went to my in-law's house. And I have to be honest. Every once in a while, I find myself in this. I got to get out of it. I don't know what it is. But I couldn't take the amount of people on Twitter blaming Clay Holmes for it. Couldn't take it. I lost it. And I knew I wasn't going to be on to talk about it because I was on vacation. And I knew we weren't going to have baseball for a week. So I just said, let me go down the wormhole here and fight with everybody who wants some. Everybody who wants the smoke, I'll go give it to them. Because I honestly think it's moronic to blame Clay Holmes. You might not like Clay Holmes. You might not think he's a good Yankee closer. You think they need to do better. Fine. Those are all discussions we can have. In that moment, Clay Holmes was was third on the list, quite obviously, and a distant third. On who's to blame for that loss. I mean, he got four outs. And I got into a fight with my wife because then we went to my in-laws for dinner, and I was not at my in-laws. I was buried in my phone arguing with anybody who wanted some on social media. We go to my parents' house, and I'm like, I know. I'm sorry. I can't help myself. I knew I wasn't going to be on. I knew I wasn't going to get a chance to vent and talk about it and yell about it on the microphone, and it just bothered me so much. And then the next day, I hear Evan, and I don't normally do this, but Evan was just preaching the truth, and it felt so good to hear. I needed it. Thank you, Evan, for recognizing that when a reliever gets four outs, it's not his fault. That game drove me nuts. And then, because I'm big on momentum, and this team, God, they need some. And same with the Mets. I declared them dead at the end of the 10-game homestand. And after all the nonsense with Lopez and the team meeting, they come out there, they beat Arizona for two games, and then they fall on their face the last two games. They get blown out, they blow a save. And I was like, forget this team. They were just building momentum. They had this key team meeting. They win the first two games against Arizona, and then they blow the last two. They're a bunch of bums. They're dead. And then they finally were able to capitalize on momentum, and the offense certainly built on it. And I think over 162, it's not necessarily a basketball game where it's a game of runs necessarily, but I think over 162, momentum can carry you for a while. Eventually, the momentum changes. Nothing will carry you an entire season of momentum unless you're the 98 Yankees, and that's why they're special. Momentum comes and goes, but when you get a little bit of it, especially when you're in a rut, you have to use it to pull yourself out of it. And so to win those two games, have that home run, and then literally fall down, it drove me crazy. And then out of the All-Star break, to win probably the cleanest, crisp game they've played in the last 30 games, where, you know, you saw the best of Gerrit Cole, and, you know, the stars were stars, and Soto has four hits, and they scored runs, and Volpe comes through with a big hit down the line to blow the game open, and the bullpen does its job, and they win a nice, clean, crisp game coming out of the break, and you feel like, okay, hey, they've won three out of the last four against divisional opponents who they've struggled against all year. Three out of four. The pitching's been better. The bullpen's been better. The offense has been better. There's been clutch moments and big hits. Hey, maybe we're turning that proverbial corner that Aaron Boone was telling us about. And then they followed up with just slop. They followed up with a performance where they can't hit to save their lives. They got one hit through eight or something. It was ridiculous. And then yesterday they blew opportunity after opportunity after opportunity. It's just, it's mind-numbing to go along with Nestor Cortez, who's trying to tell everybody that everybody wants to be the Yankees, and then he goes out there and just has an awful performance at home where he's been dominant. Now, I can't wait for his next start on the road where he can't get anybody out. I mean, the inability to hold on to any momentum and the inability to get clutch hits. And I know everybody wants to get on Boone, and I don't as much. But I will say this. When I see the tweets from Nestor Cortez, which, I mean, get overblown. I'm disappointed that he followed it up. You want to talk? You want to put your mouth? You want to put your money where your mouth is? You want to go out there and make a statement? You want to defend your teammates and defend yourself and defend your organization from, you know, outrageous attacks during the All-Star game? Then go out there and back it up. But I mean, some of the takes on his comments. This is the difference between this team and the '98 Yankees and the core. Okay. All right. I mean, the difference is he can't get anybody out. And David Wells threw perfect games. That's the difference. Difference isn't what they could tweet or what they talk about or their mindset. On some level, it might be, but it's not Nestor Cortez's issue. He's got to go out there and back it up. That's the problem. He didn't go out there and back it up and didn't pitch well. And then I hear guy after guy, I heard again, after today's game, hearing Marcus Stroman saying, I don't expect this to be long. When asked, like, you don't expect it to be long. It's been 35 games. It's a third of the season. Wake up. And that's on Boone. That I'll give you. That's on Boone. I don't think Nestor Cortez's pitching is on Boone. I don't think Verdugo's on Boone. I don't even think Gleyber Torres' terrible season is on Boone. I don't think DJ LeMahieu being washed is on Boone. I don't think the problems of this team are based on Aaron Boone. But I have to admit, I have no problem with him defending his players. I think his post games are way, way overblown and all the nonsense that we take from it. But I will tell you this, players are way too comfortable. Players are way too comfortable with what's going on and expect it to end any day now. When it's gone on and on and on. And it's amazing the dichotomy of these two teams. And I say these two teams when I mean the Yankees, because they have been two teams. Because the idea that the Yankees still have the best run differential in the American League, how the hell does a team that's 9-20 over their last 29 have been as bad as any team in baseball. Only the White Sox have been worse for a month and 2 weeks. And yet they still have the best run differential. That's how good they were to start the year. The same players, the same team. Somehow they have to figure out a way to turn this crap around. It's got to start later today.